I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. We have some hopeful stories for you. There is so much communication on so many platforms that people like to say the world is now flat. Music and art, it turns out, are platforms that can dissolve boundaries, making the world a more manageable place. We're going to tell you how. We begin with this story. Connecticut's Frank Penna, with financing from the World Bank, decided to reduce poverty in the country of Senegal, to help at that task anyway, by aiding musicians there to develop their sector of the economy. And now he aims to work with the World Bank to use music and film to enrich the democratic culture of people in Africa's conflict-ridden region known as the Congo. We're going to tell you what that region is all about. Music, film, and art, Frank says, can change culture, turn institutions away from violence and corruption. In Senegal, some of Frank Penna's team even convinced the country's legislature to rewrite all the bills for copyright laws so that they'd protect local musicians from being duped into low-paying music contracts. And then that bolstered Senegal's diverse art scene and homegrown musical entrepreneurs. Well, now Frank Penna sees tremendous possibilities for the Congo, despite a war there that has lasted 10 years. Frank has traveled to us from his home and office in Noank, Connecticut, to explain how he learned of the power of cultural connection and what his plans are for his next life-changing project in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That Congo region is the third largest. It's a country. It's the third largest country in Africa. It has 70 million residents. A couple words about Frank Penna. He's managing director of something called the Policy Sciences Center. This is a group established quite some time ago by three Yale University law professors. At Yale, Frank Penna received a master's degree in international relations. His interests led to an ongoing collaboration with the World Bank, and the World Bank's a premier institution for economic development across the world. For the World Bank, Frank initiated and directed programs to develop the music industry, as we mentioned, in five countries in Africa, and to develop artisanal industries in three states of India. So, Frank, welcome to the show. I want to focus first on your work in Senegal, because that is pretty much finished in an ongoing way. And this can be an example before we get to your plans and your ideas with the World Bank in the Congo. So this idea of using the music industry within Senegal, where did that idea come from?
Well, it came from the idea that Africa should be the continent of focus because it has the most intractable poverty in the world. And in Africa, we had a meeting of musicologists from around the world. There were five countries that seemed to really have potential: Senegal, Mali, the Congo itself, Kenya, and South Africa.
Why music, Frank?
The reason music was chosen was because it looked like a competitive edge for Africa. In India, in contrast, there are thousands of artisanal products produced by poor people, very poor people, earning $150 a year. In Africa,
you mean like painting saris and
yes,
pottery and whatnot.
Right.
So, but in Africa, music in Senegal, music was the thing.
Yes, in Senegal, Senegal was the country that had the greatest success because of discos in Paris. Young people in Paris like to dance to Senegalese music. So disco music, whatever you think of it, was a great money earner for the musicians in Senegal. But there are other forms of music in Africa: rap, hip-hop, reggae. African music has influenced music in the Caribbean, in Latin America, much of it because of the slave trade.
And the United States.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you go in there with support from the World Bank.
Right.
And you begin this project of helping these musicians have stronger lives. So if we look at them as a kind of small business, what were you trying to do for them?
Well, a number of things. One of the most important was to put in place a system of laws and regulations that were fair rules of the game. Because what was happening in that country, as in many African countries, is they were being exploited by, guess whom? The wealthier musicians, plus foreign record companies. What would happen is a poor musician, would write a composition or make a performance, and they would be paid a flat, when I was there, $20 for the composition or the performance. They'd be paid that either by a very wealthy musician in Senegal, or paid that by a Western record company. And then, of course, those entities would own the copyright rights to that. And goodbye, poor musician.
And these things could become great hits because we're talking about huge numbers of people interested in this music.
Yes. I mean, one of the best examples of that I did not work on because this happened in 1950. But the man who wrote The Lion Sleeps Tonight, a man named Solomon Linda, and he was a Zulu warrior, and he was brought in by Gallo Studios in South Africa. And there's a song that the Zulus sing for hunting the lion. It's, and forgive the pronunciation, but it's Mbube, M-B-U-B-E. And so they asked him to come in and translate Mbube into English and sing it. And he got in the studio, and he tried it once to translate. Didn't go. Tried it twice. It didn't go. And then at a certain point, he said, dum da dum dum da dum da da dum, the lion sleeps tonight. Now, for that song, Gallo Studios paid him $1 for the rights to that song. And Rolling Stone magazine, it's not The Economist, but it did a great study of this in 2002. And it had calculated that the royalties on that piece of music, the ownership being transferred over and over, had been $15 to $20 million. And still, the family of Solomon Linda were still living in a dirt-floored hut. And he had three daughters, and his wife and three daughters were still living in poverty. So that's probably the most egregious example of taking advantage.
So here you come, Frank, with support from the World Bank, coming into Senegal and saying, you know, we're going to help you. Before I get into some other things you did in your next project, at least hopeful to do in the Congo, why would the World Bank be interested in funding something like this? What is their interest?
Well, I think the interest initially was because the president at the time, who was there for 10 years, was an artist himself. He played the cello with Yo-Yo Ma.
You're talking about a guest we've had on the show, James Wolfensohn.
That's correct. And he also was in charge of refurbishing Carnegie Hall. He also was the treasurer of the Kennedy Center.
How did he think art, though, what's the economic interest or the interest of, you know, we're talking about democratic values. How does this?
Well, I think that he was mostly interested in it in terms of poverty alleviation, because it contributes to growth. In fact, I saw this happen. I was in a board meeting of the World Bank in this huge United Nations looking building. And the French executive director, that's the member of the board of directors from France, stood up and castigated Wolfensohn for focusing upon culture and the arts and its role in development. And Wolfensohn listened to this man very politely. And then while the fellow was standing up and Wolfensohn was sitting down, Wolfensohn said to him, Mr. Executive Director, where would France be without its culture?
Ah, perfect.
Yeah, it was perfect. And I think the other point that you bring up about culture is not only that it can alleviate poverty of extremely poor people. I mean, there was one musician in Senegal who literally lived under half of a pup tent, just a lean-to made out of canvas. And most of them didn't even own their own instruments. They would go to a venue and be given a guitar or whatever to play. Now, there's another point about cultural development, which is the message, not the medium. And the medium.
Meaning what?
or the message can be about culture, or the messages about cultural development, about respecting a wide distribution of power, disrespecting corruption, disrespecting violence, respecting the basic institutions of government. And one of the other things I did, which is not music itself, but sensitized me to this, is I had a fund, and I used the fund to pay for a group from the United Kingdom to take the play Mother Courage and Her Children by Bertolt Brecht and train street theater performers to do it all around Africa. And it was incredibly moving. And of course, you know, the play is about the wages of war, that this woman, Mother Courage, loses her three children as a result of a war she supports. So anyway, the play actually, with street performers, won a prize at a competition in South Africa of professionals. And the only professionals here were the trainers of the street theater performers.
Wow. So, that's something, Frank.
Yeah. And of course, the violence in the Congo is an example of a place where you need this built into the culture.
We're talking about making a difference worldwide. Frank Penna is here from Nowang, Connecticut. He directed a successful program to strengthen the music industry in Senegal with financing from the World Bank. And now he wants to do the same, strengthen music and film in the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
In Nigeria.
In Nigeria. So that is 70 million people.
In just the Congo.
In just the Congo that we're talking about. And you can Google Frank Penna, World Bank, and see these stories. Before we switch over to the project you'd like to work on next, how successful was this? You went into their Congress or General Assembly in the Senegal region and convinced them to rewrite their copyright laws to,
right.
To protect musicians.
That's right. We had a team from a very famous place in Munich called the Max Planck Institute, and three lawyers, and they came down and they rewrote all of the copyright legislation in Senegal, which benefits persons other than musicians, publishers, authors, etc. And the only reason that the government did that was that we took the poor musicians and formed them into an active NGO that was a lobby, a nonprofit organization, a professional association, but that had political ends. Its ends were to reduce corruption in the government, reduce corruption in business, and put pressure on the legislature to adopt fair copyright law. That's where it came from.
And it happened.
It did. In fact, the president of the Association of Poor Musicians ultimately became the chairman of the Copyright Committee for the legislature. And the collection society that was supposed to collect royalties for musicians, well, he became the chairman of the board.
Was there a lot of pushback?
Yes, there was a lot of pushback. The members of the association, called the Association of Senegalese Musicians, were scared to engage in civil disobedience because they'd get their heads beaten in. And so they would go so far. They'd hold press conferences. They'd have news releases, things like that. They would also complain to the World Bank office itself, right in Senegal, and say, you know, you told us that you were going to let us know when certain monies were available, but the government didn't let us know. So why didn't that happen?
Mm-hmm. And so do you consider what happened in Senegal, does the World Bank consider that a success?
I would say that under the current president and under President Wolfensohn, who were both relatively liberal in their orientations, that was true. I think during the presidencies of Mr. Wolfowitz, Mr. Zelik, who were both appointed by President George W. Bush, I don't think that was true. And they wanted to focus on more traditional activities like building airports, building roads, small farm agriculture, but it was much more.
So just a difference in approach.
Yes.
As to how to, I guess, what would be the word? Assist in a country?
Sure.
Help strengthen a country?
And develop it economically.
Move a country toward a greater sense of democracy?
And yet
respect its own culture and
that's
desire
right.
to have life the way they want it to be.
Yes, and of course, in Senegal, we weren't trying to have them produce Western-oriented music, but based upon their own music, even their own musical instruments, many of which you won't find over here.
Hmm. All right, we're going to talk with Frank Penna next, and yet another person is doing a project in Nepal. This is kind of good news on the show about making a difference in an international way. And this time we're looking at Senegal and what Frank and his team and the World Bank did to change the music industry there and culture, too. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. Find the books, people, recipes, tips, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Okay, we have Frank Penna here. He lives in Noank, Connecticut, and this is about making a difference worldwide. He has directed a successful program to strengthen the music industry in Senegal with financing from the World Bank. And he wants to do the same, strengthen music, and eventually get to film in the Democratic Republic of Congo and elsewhere in Africa. The World Bank is interested in this because they believe that alleviating poverty is important to build democratic values and to change in positive ways in countries around the world. In this region we're talking about, and including the Democratic Republic of Congo, these are some of the poorest places on earth. And so that's why the World Bank is interested. The World Bank is the premier institution working in culture in all the world. And so Frank has, his work has been supported by them. Frank, I want to tell you a quick story. Our reporter, a journalist and senior editor here at WNPR, Diane Orson, is a musician and went off to a music camp in another country. And there were musicians from all over the world. And not expecting this, they all appeared in this one place at this facility. And everybody looked at everybody else and realized that there was no common language. So there was no way for people to communicate. And so people milled around. And she said somebody picked up a guitar and started strumming the Beatles. And all of them sang the words in English. Everybody knew the words to Beatles songs. So that says something to me about the power of music and the power of using culture within small groups and ones as large as an entire country.
Yes, and I think that in terms of the World Bank's perspectives, it's begun with poverty alleviation. And in Congo, for example, the average income per capita there, 70 million people earn a dollar a day. A good hotel there will cost $300 to $400 a night, to give you some idea of the disparities. What that means to the World Bank is too few calories as well as dirty water. Now, therefore, it's good to develop the music industry amongst poor musicians to help people have more food and clean water. However, it's also important in a country like that where 3 million people have died in the war in the eastern Congo, where mass rape and amputation are used as weapons of war to change the culture. And this is true throughout Africa, so that violence isn't seen as a means to end, but rather negotiation leading to compromise, where persons in charge of these armies who are annihilating each other will not be respected, where there will be a sense of respect for a broad distribution of power, for the development of various democratic institutions. And this has to start from grade school up. So music can contribute these messages, as can the other arts like film in Nigeria.
So let's get to this. Your next plan, the plan that you're working on, I know you're in discussion now with the World Bank, because they want to focus on the Democratic Republic of Congo for the reasons that you just stated. There's a lot of war. There is violence, unspeakable violence there, and critical poverty. People living on a dollar a day. We're talking about a region just in the Democratic Republic of Congo of 70 million people. What is your plan there? Music again?
Well, it's not my plan. Really, a dozen people worked with me as a team, maybe 15 at different times in these different countries. And we've always been talking about where to go next and where would this be useful. And we did want to go to the Congo when we started this in the year 2000. It went to 2006. But the Congo was then considered too violent for this team of people to go, even for anyone to visit. Even now, the bulletins from the State Department, Canada, England, all advise even against a visit, much less working there. So now, from our talks of our team members, we think we can do something in the Congo on music. It's seven times as large.
I'm just trying to move you in front of your mic.
Oh, okay. It's seven times as large as the country of Senegal in population.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, Nigeria has this booming film industry called Nollywood, and it sounds silly, but it produces films for $25,000 that are like soap operas and simple actioners, but it produces between $500 million and $750 million a year, and it employs 2 million people.
It's called Nollywood.
Right, off of Bollywood in India. Now, the possibility...
$25,000 a movie?
Right. Right.
And they're making $500 million.
Right.
Amazing.
And it is amazing.
And people love, you were telling me that people love these stories.
Yes, they'll pay a dime, a quarter to see them in the films. And the important point is that what isn't occurring there is the messages, the cultural development messages about sharing of power, against violence, against corruption. These messages don't have to be the subject of the whole movie, in other words, that Marx wasn't all wrong, but can be put into the script for a soap opera or an actioner and show that corrupt officials aren't people to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point about cultural messages.
So you're having discussions with the World Bank to do this. Here's what we're doing on the show. We're talking with Frank Penna, who lives in Noank, Connecticut, and has a long history of working for the World Bank and with them to bring culture to the poorest places in the world. To bring messages of anti-violence and anti-corruption. And so sights set now on the Democratic Republic of Congo and its 70 million citizens, and also Nigeria, which is starting, as he just mentioned, their own Nollywood, sort of a riff on Bollywood in India. And it is already a success. And so we'll see what happens with that. So we're asking you, we're going to open the phones to you. We're asking you, if there is an international project that you care about, or if you have questions for Frank Penna about the project that he's been working on, we'd love to hear from you. I was thinking about a program called Heifer International, where they give people goats in these villages, and they get to own them, build the herds, and these things become life-sustaining. Just as Frank Penna equipped musicians in Senegal so that they could have their own businesses, changed the copyright laws with a big team of people so that these musicians in Senegal would be protected. And their music now influences the world. So this was, by all accounts, quite a success. So here's our number, 203-776-9677. They say the world is flat now, that boundaries can be erased, that cultures can be strengthened by focusing on the arts. And I think Frank Penna's experience is you know, some proof of that. 203-776-9677. If you are working on an international, volunteering perhaps on an international project yourself, please call us. Or there's one you're interested in. We're going to talk to somebody else who's doing something similar. 203-776-9677. And if you would like to find out more about what Frank Penna is doing, just Google Frank Penna, P-E-N-N-A, Frank Penna World Bank, and you'll see the whole story. Frank, we're going to go now to, I'm sorry, they're asking for the phone number again, 203-776-WNPR. We're going to go now to a woman in Hartford, Connecticut. This is Laura Spiro, and she directs an organization from Hartford called Eva Nepal, E-V-A, N-E-P-A-L. That's because it's in Nepal. She's bringing dental care to the people of the Nepal region in India. And you can find her online at evanepal.org. Laura, are you on the line? We're going to get her on the line. Okay, so we'll do that very quickly. 203-776-9677. Frank, with the war right now in the Democratic Republic of Congo, it's been going on for, what, 10 years?
10 years, right.
And, you know, pretty violent, but you're saying at least you can get in there. You feel now, the team feels you can get in. So what, you know, what are the prospects when it's in this kind of stage that it's
well,
in?
Well, it's...
where do you
begin?
The
Congo is a huge country going from the below the equator, from the Atlantic Ocean almost to the Indian Ocean. And the area of the war is in the extreme east of the Congo, almost at the Indian Ocean. The capital of the Congo, Kinshasa, is in the far west, and
okay.
It's an enormous country. So that we would be working primarily in Kinshasa. It's a city, though, of 10 million people, and within the boundaries of that. In fact, Kinshasa is surrounded by a ring of so-called soldiers. And it's relative to the east, it's relatively safe.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go to Kinshasa. Now, in Senegal, there were a relatively large number of poor musicians who lived outside the capital city of Dakar. In fact, at one point we had, this was years ago, so we had an idea of using 18-wheeler trucks to bring a studio on wheels out to rural areas, have them record, send their signals up to a satellite,
wow,
and have them beam down to South Africa. Now, the Congo is not that way. The State Department recommends that if you go outside Kinshasa, they can't even protect you.
Okay. So you'd have to bring the musicians to Kinshasa.
That's right. And okay, many of them are already there. I mean, some musicians, the best ones, actually have a market right in the Congo. They can sell 30,000, 100,000 records a year without exporting them.
All right. We have, sorry for the delay. I think I sort of jumped the shark on the producers here for a second, so apologies. Laura Spiro's on the phone. She's from Eva Nepal, working from Hartford, Connecticut. And this is to bring to rural communities in Nepal all kinds of dental services. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I have Frank Penna with me in the studio. He is working on art and music in Senegal and now hopes to bring that and film to both Nigeria and to the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So now we wanted to hear a little something about your story because you're doing an international project. You bring dental care to people in remote regions in Nepal.
Yes, I started a project called the Kaski Oral Healthcare Project as part of Eva Nepal, a nonprofit that I founded, and we're doing just what you said, which is founding sustainable dental care programs in rural areas of Nepal. So we have kind of a two-year seed process where we work with the community, we help them set up local infrastructure for dental care, and that actually turns out to be the relatively simple part. Most of the effort goes into working with community members to do oral health education and kind of address all of the other pieces around the infrastructure and the availability of care. Yeah. So that after a two-year period, when we hand the project over to the local community, that they've got more than just the availability of dental treatment, but kind of this whole integrated system where people practice good prevention, they know where to find the treatment. It turns out there are a lot of pieces that go into creating a healthcare environment outside of just, you know, setting up the clinic.
Yeah. Laura, why did you do this?
It's a great question. I don't actually myself have a background in public health, in dentistry. I went to Williams College and I majored in anthropology, and I was just living in this village in Nepal after college volunteering. I was actually teaching in a primary school. And because I was kind of there without really an agenda except to volunteer, people started coming to me with this problem. They came to me with all kinds of issues, but I started to just notice that dental care seemed like an issue that nobody was addressing. So I just kind of got interested and started looking around, and there was a lot of trial and error, but the original intention was not to found a program or to start a nonprofit. It was really just sort of meeting mm-hmm. a need in the moment and working with people there who I was working with at the school and living within the community. And at each stage, we sort of said, well, that didn't quite work, but if we did it this way, you know, that might work. And well, then it kind of just grew into this thing.
I should mention that Laura would, I saw an article about you in the Washington Post Sunday magazine, that you would go home to Bethesda, Maryland, where you grew up, I gather, and have road races. And get the local school kids to help you and use the, what, $10,000 from that to sort of fund what you were doing. So it's not like you were bankrolled with millions when you were starting out with this.
Yeah, this definitely went in the opposite direction. We were really doing a lot of the programs and the work before there was money for it, and honestly before there was a plan. You know, like I said, it was really sort of addressing the need in the moment. And it was as we realized that we were getting on to something that I started to realize I need to think about this more strategically, found a nonprofit. The road race has been in the neighborhood where I grew up in Bethesda, and that's been just a wonderful experience. It literally started out as me going around the neighborhood and gathering people to walk around the neighborhood, you know, do laps around the neighborhood on Thanksgiving morning and make donations for what at that time was just a project. It wasn't even a nonprofit. And it sort of gradually developed this relationship between the neighborhood where I grew up in Bethesda and this village in Nepal. And everything kind of spiraled out from there. And we still do the race. It's coming up, you know, again this Thanksgiving. And that's been a great experience for me to have those connections in my community at home and to see how warm and supportive people are, that they really want. I think we're in a very cynical time, and what I've found is that people are really looking for an outlet to feel connected to other parts of the world, to support people who are trying to do things.
Laura, I understand that in some of these villages in Nepal, they've had the philosophy in the past that you're supposed to grow old and your teeth are supposed to rot and fall out. Was the reporter exaggerating, or was this how it was?
That's very much how it is. And, you know, I think that we're like that everywhere. I mean, I work in a manual therapy clinic called the Institute of Integrative Manual Therapy here in Connecticut. And we see people all the time who say, well, my back hurts, you know, because I'm getting older. I've lost this function because I'm getting older. And there are basic assumptions about we're going to get achy, we're going to have this, we're going to have that. In here, because we have good dental care, we don't put it in that bucket. But there, because they've never had, for the most part, access to good dental care or any knowledge about prevention, it's just taken for granted that one of the things that happens as you get older is that your teeth fall out. And that can make it difficult, even when people don't like experiencing dental disease or oral disease, it's still that expectation can be hard to overcome, just like it is for many things in our environment here. But think of all of the things, you know, high blood pressure, obesity, issues that we sort of expect to happen.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with Frank Penna about pushback that he would get when he started his music project in Senegal. And of course there was pushback. People with special interests, people who felt threatened, their power threatened. What happened for you? I mean, what was the greatest pushback in these regions of Nepal?
I would say two things. The simple thing was some basic misunderstanding about dental care. Common lore says that you could go blind, you could have, you know, deafness problems or even psychological problems if you have teeth pulled or if somebody's kind of messing around, you know, with your mouth doing these mysterious treatments. So that was something to overcome. But, you know, because of the way that we structured our program with community members educating each other, we don't have people kind of from the outside coming in and telling people things. This sort of internal model addressed that pretty effectively once we figured it out. The much more insidious and difficult and sort of surprising component was just the sociopolitics within the village. So there were people. The biggest obstacle I encountered at the beginning was that there were people, like you're saying, with special interests who kind of wanted me to be putting my time, efforts, even funds into things that would appear to be social programs but would benefit them personally. And when I didn't do that, they lashed out by going after the dental program and even some other programs that I was working on there. And I was collaborating with people from the community on those other programs. They stuck their necks out, too. It was kind of amazing, yeah.
So that idea was pay to play, in other words. Okay, so will you stick around with us in case any of our listeners, Laura, have questions, or do you have to run?
No, absolutely. I would love to.
Okay. This is Laura Spiro in Hartford, Connecticut, where she directs an organization called EVA Nepal, bringing dental care to remote villages in India's Nepal region. Frank Penna is here talking about his music program in Senegal. He's from Noank, Connecticut. So, changing the world. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening. And to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Frank Penna is in the studio with me, has come from his home in Noank, Connecticut. He has been working with the World Bank in Senegal to develop and strengthen the music industry there. To alleviate poverty, to bring messages against corruption and violence. It is a war-torn region still, and the project has been quite a success. And now Frank is turning his attention, trying to do the same thing in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He is in discussions now to get this off the ground, to take a similar project into that region, which has 70 million people. So quite a large, large place. And then there's also talk of developing something in what they call Nollywood, which is a riff on Bollywood in India. Nollywood is in Nigeria. Film is taking off in Nigeria. It is now a $500 million industry. They can make films there for $25,000. On the line, we also have Laura Spiro, as I mentioned, at Hartford, Connecticut. She started something called Eva Nepal, bringing dental care to remote villages in Nepal. We have a caller, Kate. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Kate.
Hi. I traveled extensively in the Congo back in 1973-74 from Kinshasa all the way to Goma and then down eventually over to Tanzania. I spent a year traveling there in the Congo and worked in a hospital about 2,000 miles north of Kinshasa for 6 months. First, I'd like to say the people of the Congo are the most wonderful people, and it is the most beautiful country that I experienced in Africa. It's just heartbreaking what's been going on there. And what I wanted to suggest is that what I discovered was that there was this incredible network of missionaries that were working there and are still working there, have been there for, you know, in some cases, you know, since the 1920s or 30s, these groups. And with their incredible networks and the incredible things that they're doing in the medical realm and the education realm, that they would be logical places and groups to outreach in terms of getting things going, and hopefully that would go perhaps beyond Kinshasa, where I did spend about a month.
I appreciate your suggestion on the show. Frank Penna.
Oh, I wanted to say to you, Kate, that that is one idea I already tried. I had a contact to a Jesuit of a large parish in Kinshasa. So I wrote to him trying to find out who wasn't corrupt and who could join our team and help us on the ground there. So I wrote him this note, and he wrote back saying, "You can't show this note to anyone, but there isn't one parishioner in my parish whom I could say was not corrupt."
Well, what did that mean to
you,
Frank?
It means to try another parish.
I see. Okay. I guess that can happen everywhere in the world, can it? Thank you so much, Kate.
Many
really appreciate
of the,
it. Yep.
Groups have their bases here in the United States, and they certainly have the relationships with people that might get you beyond that particular issue. And lastly, I'll just say that the music was fabulous then, and I'm sure that it is now. So if you can get that project off the ground, I'm sure that we would all be listening to it as well.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
All righty.
All right. And there's room for you at 203-776-9677. Jay, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hey, first of all, it's an honor to be on your show after listening for so many years.
Thank you, Jay.
I think this is a great topic, and I'm so glad that you brought attention to the fact that humility and people of good faith and goodwill are still very strong in this world today. Thank you, Frank, and thank you, Lori, for what you do and for the other callers. I just wanted to bring to your attention another Connecticut-based organization that a very good longtime friend of mine was one of the original handful of people who were involved with the organization of, and it's called the Dominican Republic Mission Team. And they're based out of Wallingford, Connecticut, and it was originally done through the First Baptist Church of Wallingford.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend John Powers, who's a resident of Wallingford, teamed up with a few people, one of them being a priest from La Romana in the Dominican named Jean-Luc, who sadly passed away in the airline crash shortly after 9/11 in New York City. And they started this, so you're looking at something that is decades now in the making. And the program revolves around the Baté regions, the sugarcane fields in the Dominican. And these are mostly Haitian immigrants who cross over the mountains from Haiti and are in what I would call probably the most legal state of slavery left in the world today, in the conditions that they live in and what they are exposed to. And this program with the Dominican Mission Team travels there every year, and the group continues to grow and grow and grow. And they provide several levels of care for the people in the Baté, including building homes. They're building a school right now for the children to give them even a basic level education, which they have not had. They have built a hospital, which is now going on its third floor in the city of La Romana, that treats thousands of patients a year who didn't even have access to primary or basic medical care. They have a dental program, which Lori will smile about, called Fulfilling Smiles, where they bring a dental team there every year and do exams for these people. And they're teaching them things like sustainable farming and how to get clean water. And to see the conditions that they live in every day, you're hard-pressed to think that there are still places like that in the world. Mm. And these efforts that all of these people do are so wonderful and deserve so much support and everything that we can give them. And I think as we look forward, it's wonderful to get exposure like this, because sometimes what you know, if you don't see it, you forget about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jay. Thank you. No, please. I'm so grateful you called in, and please call anytime. Thank you for your comments so much.
Thank you, Faith.
You're welcome. Laura, I was listening to Jay's comment about having dental people come in, and that is a wonderful thing. I know many dentists who volunteer for these, many kinds of doctors who volunteer to go to other countries and spend weeks or months doing things for free. I think, Laura, your goal in being in Nepal has been to have something going on with dental care all the time so that it's self-sustaining. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I've spent many years now living in the same village in Nepal, and that's given me a sort of microcosm to see the cycle of things. And there are so many doctors and really services of all kinds doing just amazing work, giving their time, traveling, helping people for free. And it's wonderful to know that all of that is happening. I think, I chose with my programs to take a different approach and address a different aspect of the problem, which was to try to take a defined, a very focused problem and work at it from all sides, where we'd be both addressing the existing problems but also slowing the creation of the problem, and then ultimately to empower people to have their own agency and make their own choices about the trajectory of their own care. So,
thank you, Laura.
Often,
Oh, no, I just wanted to say thank you
yeah.
for being on. I appreciate you being on the show. We're almost out of time. I wish you the best of luck. You're in Hartford, Connecticut, and you can go online to evanepal.org. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me. It was very nice talking with you.
You're welcome. Me too. Frank Penna, I'll be following every move here to see how you and the World Bank proceed with your discussions to develop the musicians and their whole business economy and lives in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and then hopefully the Nollywood film situation in Nigeria. I'll be following this.
Oh, thanks. And I think one question your listeners might have is, why should they be interested in something like this? And I think one of the reasons in Africa is terrorism. If a country is dirt poor and doesn't have a functioning democratic government, it is a perfect growing ground for al-Qaeda. And in fact, al-Qaeda is moving into North Africa right now, into Kenya, et cetera.
So there are many, many reasons to proceed with this kind of international development. Frank Penna, one quick question. Sorry to give you so short a time to answer it. Why an international project instead of working on something right here at home? People ask this question all the time.
Well, both are valuable. I'm from the 60s. I started in the poverty program here.
Okay, thank you so much for being on the show. And if you would like to reach Frank Penna, you can just Google his name and World Bank. Frank Penna, P-E-N-N-A, and World Bank. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.